Hallo, schön, dass du da bist, hier beim Podcast Happy, Holy and Confident, dein Podcast fürs Herz und den Verstand. Mein Name ist Laura Marlina Seiler und ich freue mich sehr, heute einen ganz besonderen Interviewgast mit dir teilen zu können. Und zwar ist es Dr. Joe Dispenza. Und vielleicht kennst du ihn schon, er ist ein New York Times Bestselling Autor mit seinen Büchern Werde übernatürlich und Du bist das Placebo. Und er ist der Mensch, der tatsächlich es geschafft hat, Spiritualität und Wissenschaft auf eine ganz kraftvolle Art und Weise miteinander zu verbinden und ganz tolle Studien zu dem Thema zu machen, was in unserem Gehirn passiert, wenn wir meditieren, wie wir wirklich auch in unsere Schöpferkraft kommen, wie wir uns von diesen ganzen negativen Emotionen lösen können. Er hat schon hunderte von Wunderheilungen tatsächlich auf seinen Seminaren gehabt von Menschen, die tatsächlich ihre Krankheiten heilen konnten, die in ihre Kraft gekommen sind. Und ich war selber auf mehreren Seminaren von ihm, habe es selber schon mitbekommen. Und es ist wirklich einfach unglaublich, was er in seiner Arbeit macht. Und deswegen freue ich mich heute sehr, dieses Interview mit dir teilen zu können, wo er darüber spricht, ja, wie wir in unsere Schöpferkraft kommen können, wie wir es schaffen können, uns von unserer Vergangenheit zu lösen und wirklich eine ganz neue, kraftvolle Zukunft für uns zu erschaffen. Und das Interview ist auf Englisch, aber du findest natürlich auch, wie immer bei mir im Podcast, auf meiner Webseite und auf YouTube in den Untertiteln die deutsche Übersetzung. Vielleicht noch nicht sofort, aber auf jeden Fall spätestens in den nächsten Tagen wird da die Übersetzung da sein, damit du es dir auf Deutsch auch anhören kannst. Und ich wünsche dir jetzt einfach ganz viel Freude mit dem Interview mit Dr. Joe Dispenza. I'm so happy and grateful to have an amazing person on the podcast today. It's Dr. Joe Dispenza. Many of you may know him already. And I love his work and he's just amazing. And so just welcome to the podcast, Dr. Joe Dispenza.
Thank you, Laura. I'm very happy to be with you.
Thank you so much. Let's just dive right into it. You are in Brussels right now, right?
Yes.
On your seminar tour. And when you're traveling, do you have a morning routine?
I do. I mean, for me personally, I work on physical balance, chemical balance, and emotional balance. I think those are the three things that keep us healthy. So first thing in the morning I do is my number one priority is to connect with the field and to surrender my identity and create from the field instead of from matter. And that's something that's a very high value to me, because I think when you are defined by a vision of the future, for the most part, you stay out of the memories of the past. So I like to get my brain and body right before I begin my day. Then I do a workout. I do something physical for my body. And then I take care of myself, with good nutrition. And then I start my day, because the rest of the day I'm serving. So it's a good idea to take care of me before I take care of anybody else.
Yeah. Well, there have been many things already in your morning routine that I would like to talk to you. The first thing is you said you connect with the field. So I can imagine that some people are listening right now and they're like, well, he's playing soccer. What is he doing?
Yes. So, I was kind of hesitant in saying it, but I start my day with morning meditation, and I allow for 2 hours every morning for myself for that work. And so I'm an early riser. I think that according to the research that we've done numerous times, that there's a moment where when we're going inward, where we have the ability to get beyond ourselves, to get beyond our body, because we think we're our body, get beyond the people in our lives, the things that we own, our cell phone, our computer, the places we need to go to work, home, wherever, at shopping, and get beyond linear time itself. That elegant moment is when we turn inward and connect to the generous present moment. And all possibilities in the quantum field exist in the present moment. So the act of connecting is getting beyond yourself and becoming pure consciousness, dissociating from everything in the three-dimensional reality. And if you take away every body, every person, everything, every place and time itself, and you eliminate the planets, the moons, the stars, the light from the stars, you're left with this empty space, this void. And that is the field. Even though you can't see something there, doesn't mean it doesn't exist. It's where possibilities exist. It's where frequency exists. It's a level of energy that exists beyond matter. And so much research has shown that it's not matter that's emitting a field. It's the field that creates matter. So if you create from the field, you can have greater effects on matter. So for me, that moment of connecting to the quantum field, that invisible field of energy and information that governs everything material and connects everything physical, is a good place to start thinking yeah. about who you want to be when you open your eyes. And so we have to get beyond ourselves, our past identity, to create a new identity. And it's not about wealth, and it's not about success, and it's not about health. In fact, it's about who we become in the process. And so I think more and more people are interested in going inward and being able to have a little bit more control in their life.
Yes, definitely. That's what I also experienced. And what I also experienced, like in my own process of, let's say, awakening to my inner world, is that there is this ego and this part that is like, so much wants to connect with the outside, that wants to define itself by the body, by who we think we are, by what we do. So what can we do to not identify so much with our ego, with the me?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think there's got to be a balance. So we have to keep one foot in the real world and one foot in the quantum world. And that means that we have to be practical people when we're navigating in three-dimensional reality. And let's face it, we spend the majority of our time there. This is what physical reality is about engaging in this world with our senses. And so the problem is that when the ego is in balance, its job is to protect the self, to protect the body. If you're near a bonfire and the embers are blowing ashes towards you, your ego tells you to step away. If you're hiking and you're going along a very narrow cliff, it's your ego that says, stay close to the wall and stay away from the edge. It's the ego's natural job is to protect us, you know? So what happens, though, is when we get switched on by the hormones of stress, which, by the way, is 70% of the time, stress causes us to over-focus on our body. If you're being chased by Tyrannosaurus Rex and you get that rush of adrenaline and you move into emergency mode, you're going to use all of your body's resources to outrun that predator. Well, but if it's not T-Rex and it happens to be a coworker that's sitting right next to you at work, you're turning on that same response, and what was once very adaptive becomes very maladaptive, because when you turn on the stress response and you can't turn it off, now you're headed for disease. So people get addicted to the rush of adrenaline, the rush of stress hormones that arouse the brain and body. So in a sense, they start needing the people and conditions in their life to reaffirm their addiction to that emotion. In other words, they become addicted to the life they don't even like. And so this is why change is so hard. At the same time, when you're threatened by a predator, you see danger, all of your attention goes to the outer world. You're looking, you're narrowing your focus on the cause of your change in your internal state. So that becomes a habit. People all of a sudden start narrowing their focus on everything material. Well, in the quantum world, matter is, reality is both a particle and a wave, matter and energy. And so we begin to exclude the field of possibilities when we're in the habit of focusing on just the material world. And by the same means, when you're threatened, you're always beginning to select a possibility in the future based on your memories of the past. You're thinking about how much time you have to get to run away from that predator. So all of your attention is on the body, all of your attention is on your environment, and all of your attention is on time. And now where you place your attention is where you place your energy. And now you're locked into the rules of Newtonian physics, where you have to be play by a certain amount of rules. In other words, your matter trying to change matter. Now, when this happens, all of a sudden the ego gets endorsed and become overly selfish. Now we're selfish. We're trying to take care of ourselves. We become self-indulgent, self-important, self-centered, self-aggrandizing. It's all self-pity. It's all about the self. And this is where people wind up in trouble because there's only a few things you can do. You can compete, you can manipulate, you can lie, you can fight for it, you can try to predict it, try to control it. That's matter trying to change matter. So then the ego gets more frustrated because it can't produce an outcome, and then those very hormones of frustration further endorse the ego, and now the person's on the hamster wheel. They can't get out of their life. By very nature of the concept of change, to change is to be greater than your body, to be greater than your environment, and to be greater than time. So then we have to lay down the very thing we used our whole lives to get what we want for something greater to happen. And that breaking that habit of how we've created or gotten things that we've wanted in our lives is the work. That's the work. So when we create from the field instead of from matter, we have to shed the ego and we have to shed the identity. Now that sounds really simple in a phrase, but if you keep waking up every morning and thinking the same thoughts, making the same choices, doing the exact same things, creating the same experiences, and producing the same emotions every single day, and those same emotions drive your very same thoughts, your biology, your neurocircuitry, your neurochemistry, your hormones, and even your genes are going to be the same. In other words, you're programming your body into a predictable future based on what you did in the past, and now we lose our free will to the program. So you do that for 20 or 30 years, and all of a sudden you decide to sit down and find the present moment, and your body says, well, I'm on a program. I got to get up. I got to make breakfast. I got to go to the bathroom. I got to check my emails. I got to watch the news. I got to take a shower. Your body's trying to get up and do things, and you're asking it to stay in the present moment. And so then the work is reconditioning the body to a new mind. It's training the mind and the body to be in the present moment and not run to the future or the past. So then the work then is finding that present moment and having a free will that's greater than the program, having a mind that's greater than the body to condition the body to a new mind. And in the beginning, it's tedious. It takes a lot of effort. But if you know the formula and you know how to do it, we have so much research to prove that you could be sick, you could be overweight, you could have a terrible past, you could have all kinds of things that people excuse themselves for, too old, it doesn't matter. We've measured these changes on every age, every body type, every culture, every race, every disease. People have, once they understand the formula, then they know how to overcome their ego.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is what you teach, right, in your seminar. So we don't, I mean, it would really be too much to really explain how to do it. But you are on a tour right now in Europe, right? So in Germany.
And I'm in Brussels.
In Belgium, but then you will be in Germany as well, right?
I just came from Vancouver. So yes, I'm in Brussels, and then I'll do a few events before Germany, but yes.
Yeah. So everyone who really wants to get into it, like go to the events. It really changed so much for me as well. But what I love about when I've been at your seminars is one sentence you say very, very often is, how do we know it? We measured it. So maybe we can talk a little bit about how you measure and what were, like, for you, your most important findings when you're measuring, like, the brain waves. What is changing, actually? Because you can really see in the brain what changes when we go into this, like, when we connect with the field, when we go into this deep connection with ourselves. So maybe we can talk a little bit about that.
Sure. I mean, in the last 9 years or so, I've done extensive research on our student body, on our community. And the reason that I decided to do that is because we started seeing people in a weekend workshop have significant changes in their health. You know, walk in with MS, and then 3 days later, out of their wheelchair, walking by themselves. People with all kinds of health conditions were beginning to change in just a few days. And when I saw that, I said, something must be happening inside of them. They have a subjective experience, but let's measure it objectively. Why? Because I want to demystify the process so that people have within their reach all the tools to begin to make significant changes. So I gathered a team of scientists and researchers. Many of them were skeptical. And that's great news because I love a skeptic. It means they're going to challenge the theory. So we've done over 8,500 brain scans. We'll do some brain measurements in Bonn, Germany when we're there in March. Our team of researchers will be there. And we're interested in measuring a person's brain, as an example, before they come to the event, They go through a week of training and a week-long workshop where they're with a community of 1,200 people, everybody understanding the information, giving numerous opportunities to apply it, to refine their skill. And then at the end of a week, let's measure their brain again. And I want to see if those changes aren't just in their minds, they're in their brains. And so we have such important research to show that within even 4 days, we see people with anxiety, depression, traumatic brain injuries, Parkinson's disease, Alzheimer's, all kinds of conditions in their brain, as well as conditions in their body, have significant changes. We've also measured thousands of brains in real time. In other words, what's going on inside during the transformation process? Can we begin to find a way to create a better effect for a person who's making those changes? And as an example, we now know that if you're analyzing your life within some disturbing emotion, like if you're angry, if you're frustrated, if you're fearful, if you're resentful, that if you're analyzing yourself and your life within that emotion, you're going to make your brain worse every single time. The key then is to be able to get beyond that emotion. And if you're no longer analyzing your life within that emotion, we could say if emotions are a record of the past, you're no longer thinking in the past, because the solution isn't in that emotion. It's when you get beyond it. We now can induce certain states. We know that certain words produce dramatic brain changes. We can teach people how to regulate and change their brain waves. And we have students that can do it in 4 seconds, 5 seconds, 9 seconds, 10 seconds. It's a skill. They've practiced it enough times that they can slowly get beyond their analytical mind. And what separates the conscious mind from the subconscious mind is the analytical mind. So if you're going to make changes to those automatic programs where 95% of them exist subconsciously, you can't do it with your conscious mind. That means you got to know how to regulate and change your brainwaves. So we also have incredible research to show what the mystical experience looks like. We now know exactly what happens when the brain switches on and has a transcendental moment. In fact, we can predict it. And at the same time, we know how to induce it. So these are all exciting things, because the brain measurements during the transcendental moment are producing such order and coherence in the brain, producing such elevated energy in the brain, is suppressing the analytical mind, the thinking brain, and this whole other system called the autonomic nervous system is switching on. And that's what begins to heal the body. So we're starting to piece together this wonderful model, Laura, that shows that there is a very direct correlation between the brain and the body. And there's a direct correlation between the brain and this invisible field called the quantum field. And when the brain starts processing a new stream of consciousness, there's a change in energy. And when there's a change in energy, all of a sudden you see more energy moving into the brain and the light bulb gets brighter and the person is going into a super aware or super conscious state. In fact, they're having an inward experience that's more real than the reality outside of them. And since experience enriches the brain, it begins to mold and shape the brain and change the brain from the past. By the same means, that experience produces an emotion. But the emotion isn't sadness, pain, suffering, guilt, shame. The emotion is this quality that is very difficult to explain in words, but it's a level of love that is not chemical. It's very electric. It's an arousal that gives the body this new information. So it's that elevated emotion that begins to select and instruct new genes. And genes make proteins, and proteins are responsible for the structure and function of the body. And the expression of proteins is the expression of life. And so in a matter of seconds, you see a person with a disease get a biological upgrade in one particular second. So we could say then they're upgrading the human operating system. So we're getting really close to closing the gap between knowledge and experience. What's the significance of that? Well, we've measured gene expression. We said, can people, by thinking new thoughts, making new choices, doing new things, having new experiences in 4 days and experiencing new emotions, are they able to regulate new genes? And we found out that just in 4 days, people signal the gene that reduces cancer and tumor growth, two genes that reduce oxidative stress, anti-cancer, anti-aging, anti-heart disease, anti-stroke, anti-neurodegenerative, anti-inflammatory, antimicrobial, genes that cause nerve cells to grow, not just making new connections, but the growth of new neurons in response to novel experiences. all kinds of new genes that are expressing themselves. So the person in 4 days can literally change their genetic destiny. We've measured heart coherence. When a person is angry and frustrated and resentful, their heart beats out of order. When they're feeling elevated emotions like gratitude and appreciation and thankfulness and love and joy, they're able to create more coherence in their heart. When the heart starts beating coherently, it begins to produce a measurable magnetic field. That field of energy is frequency, and all frequency carries information. And now they're beginning to expand their energy and connect to some invisible field. That frequency then, that energy can carry the thought of their health, can carry the intent of their wealth. Suffering can't do that. So many people, they're trying to think positively with the 5% of their conscious mind, but their body has been programmed into negativity. So mind and body are in opposition. So teaching people how to regulate and actually see that when they do that, if they're wearing a monitor, you can see the heart go into this great state of order, and they can self-regulate. So the significance of that is when they return back into their lives, they have the ability to change certain imbalanced emotional states to more healthy, balanced states. And so we have research to show that people can sustain this state for 45 minutes to an hour at a time. And now the question is, if you can do it with your eyes closed in a meditation, the next step is to be able to do it with your eyes open in your life. And so when you're able to self-regulate that, that means then you're not taking your attention off your inner world of thoughts and feelings because of some condition in your outer environment. You're able to shorten their stress response, and that's called emotional intelligence. We've measured the energy of the room. We now know that in every event, the energy of the room gets bigger. That's available energy for people to heal with, to create a new life. We've measured the energy around people's bodies. When they're literally in a transformative moment, the body actually liberates energy. They go from particle to wave, from matter to energy, and they're building their own electromagnetic field. And now that's the resource for them to begin to create with. And when we live so addicted to the hormones of stress and all of our attention is on the body, the environment, and time, we draw from this field of vital life force surrounding our body and turn it into chemistry. And the stress response actually draws from that field and taps the body's resources. And so there is no field to heal. There is no energy to create with. We've measured immune response. In 4 days, people trading anger and aggression and guilt for an elevated emotion, will it strengthen their immune system? By 50% in 4 days, their immune system got stronger. So that's significant because we see people with MS and lupus and food sensitivities and anaphylactic conditions literally in 4 days heal themselves, and that's because they're changing their internal state. We've measured telomeres, the shoestrings on the end of DNA, to say if a person does a meditation for 60 days, will it lengthen their life? And 74% of the people or that were involved in the study lengthened their life 4 to 8 days. I mean, if they did it for a year, you can see they're changing their genetic destiny. So we now know that common people around the world are doing the uncommon. We now know that there's a language to be able to explain it. And the language is science. Science is the contemporary language of mysticism. It's what demystifies the mystical. And combining quantum physics with neuroscience, with neuroendocrinology, with psychoneuroimmunology, with epigenetics, all of those sciences point the finger at possibility. So when people can begin to reason by pure reason, pure logic, that they're not doomed by their genes, they're not hardwired to be a certain way for the rest of their lives, if they apply the formula, and it's difficult in the beginning to get beyond yourself, but if you keep going, just like riding a bicycle, sooner or later you start figuring it out. And so evidence then, not only in the scientific measurement has been important, but now we're seeing just, I honestly am probably more surprised than anybody by some of the things that we're witnessing in the last year. I mean, we're talking about blind people seeing, deaf people hearing, tumors disappearing right before our eyes. We're seeing people with Parkinson's disease switch on, people with Raynaud's syndrome with significant hormonal imbalances, brain tumors. I mean, we've seen so many things in a week's time literally disappear. People with stage 4 cancer just go into remission. So now that evidence of the person actually standing in front of an audience and saying, I had this condition and now it's gone. They have the scans and the measurements to prove it. And they don't look like a movie star, and they don't look young, and they don't look buffed, and they don't look healthy. They just look like a normal person. The audience relates with that person, and they start saying, my goodness, if this person can do it, then it makes sense that I can do it as well. So then that's so important, because the experience leaves a footprint in the quantum field for someone else to step into. But when you're witnessing the evidence in three-dimensional reality, you cannot go back to being the same person again. And that evidence then is happening not only in our measurements, but the evidence and changes that are happening in people's bodies and in their lives, not only with their health, but new relationships, new careers, new opportunities, abundance, whatever it is. Once you start applying the formula, you begin to prove to yourself that you're more of the creator of your life and less of the victim of your life.
Yeah, thank you so much. That was a lot of input. Yeah. Thank you so much, because it's so valuable. I have many questions. Okay, let's go with the first. Would you say, when listening to you and while I was attending also your seminar and also the work I do, the thought that always like accompanies me is that I think that we are maybe using 10% of our power, of our creation power? Or what would you say? Like, I think we are, like you said, we are the creator of our reality. But when I look out, or when I'm going with a metro here in Berlin or something, and I see the people, most of them are in a victim state. Most of them are just I think you say it also sometimes, they let life happening to them instead of creating life.
Sure.
So the first question is, what do you think? Why is it like that? Where did we lose our power of creation? And like, what would you say to bring it like really into practical day-to-day life? How can we get back to it? How can we acknowledge our own power of creation?
Well, I mean, it's a long story, but let's make it short. The bottom line is that if the definition of a victim is when someone says to you, why are you so unhappy? And you say, I am this way because of that person or that thing, that circumstance, which is really saying, I'm allowing my outer world to control my feelings and my thoughts. And so then the moment you say, hey, this person or this circumstance is making me feel this way, then you're a victim to those circumstances. So then there's nothing wrong with that. It's just how we live in our humanity. So as an example, the more altered you feel emotionally inside of you because of some condition in your outer world, let's say something causes you to feel angry or something causes you to feel sad, the moment you stop feeling like Laura and you start feeling altered, the change in your internal state causes you to pay attention to what's happening in your outer world. And so you narrow your focus on the cause. Now, the problem with that is that the problems and circumstances in our life that are causing us to feel the most emotions, we're putting most of our attention on. And where you place your attention is where you place your energy. So in a sense, you're giving your power away to that person or that circumstance. So then now your energy is commingled with the person that you dislike, with your enemy, with your boss, with your coworker, with your ex, because that's where all of your attention is. So then when you're living in survival, then you're saying, well, that person who's betraying me or that person that's making me feel unhappy, I got to be prepared when it happens again. So we start anticipating subconsciously that it's going to happen again. So we live in this constant state of vigilance, this constant state of survival. And in survival, it's not a time to create. If you're being chased by a predator, it's not a time to sit down on the ground, go within, close your eyes. You would be vulnerable. It's not a time to learn. It's not a time to open your heart. It's not a time to go within. It's a time to run, to fight, and to hide. And so the primitive nature in us in survival, which again, 70% of the time, we're living in that state of emergency. And in emergency, it's not a time for growth. It's not a time to create. It's not a time for repair. It's a time for emergency. So then think about this. So then, if you're waking up every single day and you're living in this constant state, then for the most part, then you're not going to want to believe that your thoughts have anything to do with your future. In fact, getting a person to sit down and close their eyes, who's fearful, who's anxious, who's worried, who's depressed, that takes an enormous amount of effort. So, but if they understand the theory and the technology, then then all of a sudden, if they start applying themselves and going within, and every time they start noticing a thought that's connected to a person or to an emotion, and they stop and they settle their body back down into the present moment, the act of doing that is a victory. Most people say, I can't focus. No, you became aware that you lost the present moment and you return back to the present moment. Every time you do that, you're telling the body it's no longer the mind, that you're the mind, and there's a liberation of energy. The body's releasing energy. Then the body says, well, you normally wake up, it is at 8 o'clock, you get in traffic, and now all of a sudden you start getting angry in traffic, and now you're sitting there with your eyes closed and the body's going, you're off schedule. You usually feel angry at this time. So the body starts craving anger. And so what it does is it sends signals to the brain of all the past things in your life you can get angry about. And now the moment you realize that your brain is doing that, just for the addiction of that emotion, and where you place your attention is where you place your energy. If you put your attention on that emotion, you're siphoning energy out of the present moment into the past. You become aware of that. You return back to the present moment, and you tell the body then it's no longer the mind. You settle it down. That's another victory. Then the body says, well, I want to get up. I got emails to check. I got to take a shower. I got phone calls to make. I got texts to return. And it wants to get up. And you wanted it to sit down, and you realize that when it's on a program and it starts to do that, and you settle it back down into the present moment, it's another victory. That means then your will is getting greater than the program, and David is slaying Goliath. And the act of doing this over time, sooner or later, like the body, it's just the animal, it's just the servant. Sooner or later, if you're training an animal to sit, sooner or later it's going to learn how to sit, and the body finally surrenders to another mind. And that is the moment the person starts freeing themselves. So then once they get beyond their body, their identity, the people in their life, the things they own, the place they live, in time itself, when they become pure consciousness, now it's time to begin to connect to that resource, that field. And being able to understand how to do that allows them all of a sudden to create more from holism, from oneness, instead of duality, polarity, or separation, because the hormones of stress heighten the senses and we become materialists, which means then there's me here and there's you there. And if you look different than me, I'm going to feel more separate. Then there's me here and then there's my dreams way over there, way out there, because that's how I see them, like at a distance. And I got to drag my body through space, and it's going to take time for me to get my new house, my new career, my new relationship, because I'm matter trying to influence matter. So then in the quantum, though, when you start connecting to this field, you experience less separation and more wholeness. And now when you create from the field, all you have to do is change your energy. And so when you do that properly, you no longer play by the rules of Newtonian physics. In fact, you do the opposite. You start drawing experiences to you because now you are the vortex. We could say you collapse time and space, or the experience is drawn to you. Now all of a sudden the game changes, because the synchronicities, the coincidences, the serendipities, the opportunities start showing up in your life, and you're now the vortex. You're the center of that. When that starts to occur, and you start correlating what you were doing inside of you that produced that experience outside of you, you're going to pay attention to what you did, and you're going to do it again. And sooner or later, you're going to start believing more that you're the creator of your life and less the victim of your life. Now, here's the caveat. You can't have a great meditation, feel all holy, feel all spiritual, feel all connected, and then the moment you open your eyes, you return back to the program. You start getting angry, you start getting frustrated, you start getting impatient. The moment you do that, you just disconnected from the energy of your future, and you're back to the energy of your past. And don't expect anything to change in your life. That, in fact, the whole purpose of this work is to change the brain and body so that when you get up from your meditation, that you can maintain that modified state of mind and body your entire day. And if you can, get ready, because weird and wonderful things are going to begin to happen in your life. So you got to be able to sustain that state with your eyes open as well as you did in reaching there with your eyes closed. And it's a practice. It's a practice.
Yeah, I think that's so important to be aware that it's a way, it's a process, it's a practice. And what you said, you really need to retrain your body, because our body is so used to it, maybe 30, 40, 50 years. Of course, it just takes time. And I can just, like if I just think about what changed in my life in the last 5 years, when I just started to getting aware of the field and of my own power of creation, it's just
I just started to focus on abundance, and I live like the most abundance life I could ever imagine. Like, it's even more than I thought. Like, it's just crazy what happened in my life. And what you also said, it's like the serendipities, the people that come into your life, the opportunities. It's just like you're going, okay, where is this coming from? It's so amazing. Yeah.
And it's, I mean, even Einstein said it's a vibrational universe. I mean, when there's a vibrational match between you and some experience that exists in the quantum field, get ready, because if you're drawing experiences to you, and then all of a sudden you have to keep redefining abundance. I mean, my definition of abundance today is very different than it was just a year ago, because so many people think abundance is about money, but abundance is having more than you need.
Yeah.
Like having way more than you need. So all my needs are met and then some. And then when you have that experience, then what is your next definition of abundance? If you truly believe then that's abundance, is there another level? But you would never know that until you've had the experience of abundance to that point. So then all of a sudden, our definitions begin to change. Same thing with health. You see all these people, they come in and they think that they just want to get their body healthy. But what they're really doing is getting their mind healthy. And they're changing their energy. They're having all these other things going on. And they reach a point where they're so happy with themselves. They're so in love with life. They're in such a state of grace and gratitude that they could care less if they have the disease, because they're so happy with them. That's the moment disease goes away, because they're no longer the same personality. They're somebody else. The disease exists in the other person because they're thinking differently. They're acting differently. They're feeling differently. And how you think, how you act, and how you feel is called your personality. And your personality creates your personal reality. Change your personality, you change your personal reality. Most people are trying to create a new personal reality as the same personality, and it doesn't work. You literally have to become someone else. So teaching people how to do that, and then strengthening their belief in themselves, because when you believe in yourself, you believe in possibilities. When you believe in possibilities, you believe in yourself. So many people close the door to possibilities because they're viewing their future through the lens of the past. Why? The brain is a record of the past. It's an artifact of everything you've learned and experienced in this moment. It's wired to the past. And feelings and emotions are the end product of past experiences. So most people wake up in the morning, they start thinking about their problems. Those problems are memories that are etched in their brain that are connected to certain people and things at certain times and places. The moment they start remembering their problems, they're already thinking in the past. Every one of those problems has an emotion associated to them. So they start feeling discouraged. They start feeling unhappy. They start feeling like a failure. And the moment they feel those emotions, now the body's in the past. Why? Because thoughts are the language of the brain and feelings are the language of the body. And how you think and how you feel creates your state of being. So in a sense, most people wake up and their entire state of being is in the past. So how can they see a new possibility when they're viewing their future through the lens of the past? So then I say, if you're not being defined by a vision of the future, then all you're left with is the memories of the past, and you will be predictable in your life. So people love to wait for trauma or crisis or disease or diagnosis or loss or something to go wrong in their life, where they just reach their lowest point where they say, I got to change and I got to stop thinking this way. What have I been thinking about? How have I been acting? How have I been feeling? And the act of observing yourself by observation begins to disentangle you from the program, because now you're the consciousness observing the program, and you begin to objectify your subjective self. That's lighting a match in a dark place. And most people would rather turn on the TV, they'd rather get on their cell phone, they'd rather get on the internet, they would rather something outside of them change how they feel inside of them. And this work is about regulating it without anything outside of you, because when you do that, now you're free. You don't need a person, you don't need a drug, you don't need a thing, you don't need a shopping spree, a football game, you don't need any of those things. You can do it by yourself. And that's when we begin to develop this thing called unconditional love, because our students, we've measured their neurotransmitters. Oxytocin levels, and many of our students go up hundreds of times. Oxytocin is the love chemical, and oxytocin signals nitric oxide, and nitric oxide signals a chemical called derived endothelial relaxing factor, which is a big word for causing your heart to literally swell, causes the arteries in your heart to get more oxygen, more nutrients, more blood. It's not something mystical. It's very physiological. It's like just like when you're sexually aroused and blood flows there, the same thing is happening, but only it's happening in your heart. And you feel with a different consciousness, so much love. This is where our creative center starts. This is where the beginning of our divinity. This is our connection. This is the union of polarity, the union of opposites. This is oneness and where wholeness begins. This is where we should be creating from. So if you can't get energy here and you can't feel a love for your future, that means then on some level you're more addicted to the emotions of the past. So then this is really fundamental, because when people start to make those changes, they start getting happy for no reason. And all the things that they thought they wanted, you know, the career, the relationship, all those things, they no longer want them because they feel so whole. They feel like they already have them. And so if your oxytocin levels are up 200 times, you're so in love with life, you feel so amazing that you wouldn't start judging another person, because if you did, you'd lose the feeling. And people start figuring out, I'm just going to stop judging. Hey, that person that betrayed me 10 years ago, I feel so whole, I'm going to let them go. I got to take my attention off them, because you feel so great. You don't really care about them any longer, and that's forgiveness, but you're not trying to do it. You're not trying to be spiritual. You're not trying to be forgiving. It's the side effect of a shift in consciousness, and when energy makes it to the heart, it goes right to the brain. We've measured that enough times, and it resets the person's baseline for fear and anxiety. It begins to change the survival centers in the brain, and the person's no longer so vigilant looking around in their outer world of what's going to change and try to control and predict it. They're more relaxed into the present moment. And of course, now things are happening around them. So the work then becomes instrumental, not just because we want people to make those significant changes, but we also want them to reap the benefits of their own efforts. And I just talked to someone this morning, just huge, huge manifestation happened to this woman. A lot of money, a lot of wealth. She's crying the whole day. And she said, I'm starting to get that I created this. Now, That means then a layer of the illusion that we're powerless. You know, we have been so conditioned into powerlessness, into hopelessness, into self-limitation. One of those experiences where you pop above the veil and you start to see that you are that powerful. Wow, but not in an egocentric way. Not in, hey, look at me, I'm self-aggrandizing. It's more like you're humbled, and at the same time you feel amazing. Wow, imagine if the whole world was like that. And so we're piercing this 4-minute mile. This last year in our work, all the healings, all the amazing experiences, all the mystical moments, all the transformations that are going on in people, piercing through that 4-minute mile. Once the 4-minute mile was broken, then everybody said, hey, we can all do it. And within 2 weeks, everybody started breaking that mile. Well, that's exactly what's happening. We're breaking through this veneer, this level of consciousness that says you are powerful. You could be old and be powerful. You could be young and be powerful. You could be healthy and powerful. You could be sick and be powerful. You could be anything you want and still do this. And in time, your biology begins to change, and so does your life.
Yeah, beautiful. Let's talk about the heart, because I think the heart is such an important part of your work as well. How can we live more from our heart? How can we get more in this creation space in our heart?
Yeah, the answer is really simple. You practice. Imagine, listen, where you place your attention is where you place your energy. We were just talking about this at the week-long event in Vancouver just the other day. You got 1,000 people that all come to the event. Their attention is on their boss, their coworker, their ex, their husband, their kids, their everything. Everything in their outer world, they're shifting their attention all over the place. And I'm asking them to take all of their attention off of all of those people, all those things, unfold into this field and become pure consciousness. And out of anywhere you can place your attention, I'm going to ask you to place it on your heart. Now, where you place your attention is where you place your energy. So in a sense, just like a flower that needs the life force to bloom, if you keep feeding your heart, your attention, and your energy, and you learn how to regulate, and you learn how to trade fear for joy, and you start practicing this, in time, you'll be able to develop the skill to allow your heart to open more. So Most people, though, they try it for a second or two and they say, well, it didn't really work. I'm having problems opening my heart. But if I keep pushing the person and we keep giving them more reasons to feel joy and love and freedom, and we start seeing a community starting to do it, like 1,000 people, okay? You have maybe 10% the first day that are starting to open their hearts. The moment they start to open their hearts, they're producing that coherent field around their body, and you're sitting next to a person, and your field begins to mingle with their field, and all of a sudden those two fields come together, and you build a bigger field. The higher the amplitude, the higher the energy. So in time, you start to see people in a community start to resonate in this frequency called love. And the heart's like it's an antenna in a sense. It begins to sense that and it begins to open more. At the same time, they're in an environment where they're safe. They're in an environment where there's no threats, there's no danger. They're retreating from their lives. They're disconnecting from the people and things and places, learning information and learning how to practice, how to use that information. Like a skill then, they begin to notice that they're feeling more joyful. They start to notice that they feel more love. And each day there's a progression. So we start every meditation in this work by acknowledging this creative center. Why? Because it requires a clear intention, which is a coherent brain, and an elevated emotion, which is a coherent heart, to begin to produce an effect on reality. So we teach students how to create brain coherence, and boy, we have so much research to show that you can do it. And we teach them how to create heart coherence, which we just did a huge experiment just last week in Vancouver, and the result of social coherence is an amazing thing, because our research also shows that when you open your heart, the people that you're connected to within your life will feel those autonomic effects. We can take the 750 people, set them in a room, and have the people in the front wearing heart rate monitors, and everybody moves into an elevated state and sends the thought on the frequency of love, that the people wearing the heart rate monitors, that their bodies be healed, that their lives be enriched, that their dreams come true, that the mystical find them. And at this exact same time, in the exact same day, in the exact same meditation, many of those people, the majority of them, go into heart coherence. They're being affected in a very non-local way. So how do you change the world? Well, you get enough people in heart coherence that not only that they're just meditating for peace, they're not praying for peace, they're the living prayer of peace. They're the example of peace. They're walking their talk. They're walking the prayer. They are a peace. They've reached that point where they are peace. And when you see people like that, that are unpredictable, like they're not normal in the way that everybody else reacts, they're giving you permission because of mirror neurons to do the same. And all of a sudden you see something else emerging, a new consciousness, like a flock of birds all moving at the same time, or a group of fish all moving at once. That living organism gives the appearance of one big organism to predators. And now you have this indivisible kind of group consciousness. That's where we're going in this. We want to, in the living organism called the human being, we heal one another. That's what we do. We take care of one another. We exchange information. We teach one another. We shine for one another, not because we want to be better, to show people that they can shine too. That's what the living organism does. So in this age right now, the age of this living organism, selfish individuality will not sustain the living organism. This kind of collective consciousness, this group consciousness, this selflessness is what begins to feed the living organism. And now, just like the school of fish, you have this one mind, one heart, where everybody's at a whole new level of consciousness. And if you do that really well, it's going to begin to produce measurable changes in the world. And hopefully that's where we're going.
Yes, that is what I hope for too. So what are you most grateful for today?
Wow, we just had an amazing, amazing, amazing event in Vancouver. A lot of miracles. I'm so grateful for the opportunity to contribute, to an opportunity to make a difference. I'm so grateful for my team, my staff, my team leaders. I'm grateful for the fact that I'm alive and I have this wonderful body to experience reality, and that on some level I hope that I'm making a difference. I think that's what gets me up every morning.
Thank you so much. Well, Dr. Joe Dispenza, I just really want to say thank you so much for doing the amazing work you do. I can imagine that as a scientist, on some level, it was difficult for you as well, because I can just imagine that there are many scientists who maybe don't like what you do because it's so different and so empowering. So I just can't imagine what you also had to go through to do what you're doing, and I just really want to acknowledge that and the amazing work you do. And I hope that all the people listening right now, I have your book here, will check out your new book, Werde übernatürlich in German, and I just wish you the best of luck in everything you do. And yeah, just thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much.
And thank you for doing everything that you do and spreading the information around the world that makes a difference.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Ich hoffe sehr, dass dir dieses Interview gefallen hat, dass du ganz viel daraus für dich mitnehmen konntest und ja, dass du jetzt sehr inspiriert bist, wie viel Kraft eigentlich in dir ist und was es eigentlich bedeutet, auf einer Ebene von Energie das eigene Leben zu manifestieren und nicht auf der Ebene von Materie und wie beides miteinander im Einklang ist. Und ich hoffe sehr, ja, dass dich das inspiriert hat, dass du da viel für dich mitnehmen konntest. Und ich freue mich wie immer, wenn du mir auf Instagram deine Gedanken dalässt, @LauraMarlinaSeiler, und mir schreibst, was du aus dieser Folge für dich mitnehmen konntest, was deine wichtigsten Erkenntnisse waren. Und du findest hier in den Shownotes vom Podcast auf jeden Fall auch nochmal die Links zu den Seminaren von Dr. Joe Dispenza, wenn du gerne mit ihnen in Kontakt treten möchtest oder wenn du gerne zu dem Seminar gehen möchtest. Es lohnt sich auf jeden Fall. Das ist wirklich eine unglaublich tolle Erfahrung. Und ja, ich freue mich, von dir auf Instagram zu hören, und schicke dir jetzt eine riesengroße Umarmung. Es ist so schön, dass es dich gibt. Rock on und Namaste, deine Laura.